everybody. My name is Lewis and welcome back inside the Shark Tank. I'm delighted to say I'm joined by my co-hosts Alex and James. And I don't want to waste any time this evening. Let's just get straight into it. James, great to have you back on the pod. This time last week, me and Alex were sat here, right? And we were kind of talking about Celle getting beat 26-14 by Toulon in Toulon. We were quite optimistic, you know? It was like, oh, it was a decent performance, you rotated team, et cetera, et cetera. A week on, you know, we sit here after Celle were beaten 16 points to 15 by Edinburgh on Saturday night at the AJ Bell. And the mood feels very, very different. What was your thoughts on Celle's performance from Saturday night, and kind of where are you coming at it from this week?
Well, it's disappointing because it certainly knocks us out of that competition. And one of the things we set out to do this year was to be able to compete on multiple fronts. But the lay of the land has changed significantly since we did the season preview. And I think, you know, with what's happened with Steve Diamond leaving, I put it on Twitter, and I think there's our listeners are in quite a different place on this to me, or a lot of them are, and I totally understand why. But my view is, if you take anybody as central into an organisation that Steve Diamond was to sail out of the equation, it's going to change mindsets within the club. You know, people get uncertainty. People are worried about what's going to happen next, what's happened, what's led to it. You know, somebody new comes in to head coach. Okay, you know who he is, but they're finding their feet as well. And you've seen the shock on Paul Deacon's face over the last 2 weeks. I just think it's very difficult to perform at peak performance. And don't forget, we're in a real performance industry here, where you've got to be absolutely on it and play to the absolute, you know, optimum ability nearly week in, week out, and expect to win. And I just think we probably are expecting a bit too much from this squad, who have just undergone a bit of turmoil, living with some uncertainty and also carrying a lot of injuries. Edinburgh are not a walkover. A lot of people think, you know, the Pro 14 is just a, you know, crap competition, and it's not as competitive as the Premiership. But what Cockerell has done with Edinburgh is very similar to what Steve Diamond did with Celle. You know, he's made them very, very difficult to beat, and they never feel beaten. You know, they're really, you know, some big people, and they're difficult, you know, they're big in the pack, etc. And I just think we just didn't see it out. If we'd scraped a win, I think we would have been quite happy with things. So a bit disappointed, obviously, in the way that we played and thrown away such a good start to the game. But ultimately, we're probably out of the competition anyway. The bigger picture is the same as it was. We need to bring stability back to the club, and we need to keep momentum in the Premiership. And that's by far our biggest priority.
Well, that's very well said. Very, very eloquent start to the show. Alex, I guess same question for you. I mean, you know, you were watching it Saturday night, pretty dour performance for, you know, the third or fourth week you're running from Celle. I mean, do you think this is symptomatic of the changes that have been happening at the top in recent weeks? Or do you think, you know, this is kind of more symptomatic of some restrictions in kind of how the squad's been built and, yeah, where we are as a team, as part of the Celle Sharks project that's been going for a couple of years now?
No, I think your first point is probably where I sort of land on this, in that this is a squad. And I think this comes down to, for me, that if Steve Diamond was still in charge of this team, I genuinely believe we would have won this game. We played well enough. And we just lacked a little bit of maybe composure and experience in the kind of second half, I think, when Edinburgh came back into it. But I think we showed enough to win the game, but just couldn't see it out. And I think, you know, you have to put a lot of that down to what's been going on in the last 2 weeks. We've got a new sort of person in charge. We've got a squad going through a load of changes. In that way, you know, they're dealing with new people, new structures. They've had a massive upheaval. So, you know, I think you've got to take that into account. And for me, I think, you know, we showed the first half an hour, I thought we were playing really well. And we were, I think, weren't we? You know, we looked much better than Edinburgh. We coped with everything they threw at us, and we looked really good in attack. I think it's the best we've looked in attack for a while. But we just kind of, when it started to go wrong, it went, we just didn't get a hold on the game again. And I think we've seen that so many times at the AJ Bell. where Salem started well, and then the other team, we've let the other team back into it, and it's been a nail biting finish. And kind of more recently, we've been seeing those games out. And I think, you know, maybe it was the effect of Dimes leaving and all that's come with that, and then also the effect of not having a crowd in. Maybe, you know, that's the sort of game where, sounds silly, but a crowd probably would have helped get us over the line in a tight game, kind of get the players back into it a bit. We maybe missed John O'Ross on the field as well, I think. But, you know, it's a game that I think we showed, again, enough promise that you can take the positives out of it. But at the same time, we kind of showed the same old flaws. And I think we were improving on those until Dimes left, and that seems to have kind of thrown us out a bit. So now I think for me, this is kind of symptomatic of what's been going on at the club off the field, as opposed to a kind of, you know, bigger issue that we need to completely overhaul this squad. Because I think that squad could have won that game pretty comfortably if we just had, you know, if we'd had a DOR who'd been in the job for 6 months or 12 months. I genuinely think that would have made the difference for me.
So let's pivot to some three-word reviews then. Thank you to everyone who's been sending them in over the course of today. Andrew O'Rourke, lost suffer showdown. Sam Bowditch, second half shambles. Lee Watson, trying to be positive. And then the three-word review is better than Quinn's. Very true. Grizzly, really confused performance. Marcus MG Turfcare. There you go, there's some free publicity for you. Let's not panic. Jamie, lineup vastly improved. Ben Gledhill, start winning games. And Lexity, need head coach. So, I mean, James, let's talk about the second half then. Because as Alex rightly said, you know, Sale go into halftime, 12-0 up, you know, had the line share of possession, had the line share of territory. We're looking by far the better team. And yet, in the second half, Edinburgh score 16 points, we score 3. And ultimately, Edinburgh take all 4 points on offer and win the game. I mean, what went wrong for Sale in the second half?
Well, it's actually reasonably difficult to put your finger on it, I think. You know, we previously, in previous games, we said, oh, well, the line-out stopped functioning or, you know, whatever. It was kind of just like the game just sort of drifted into a position where it became inevitable that Edinburgh were going to nick it at the end with a penalty goal. And we knew that we weren't going to get a penalty call back. You know, it was either we were going to win 15-13 and hold out, or they were going to win 16-15. And I don't know what it was. I really don't know what it was. Maybe we were just, you know, emotionally, physically exhausted or something. I'm not 100% certain. But, you know, when Edinburgh got back into the game, we sort of seized up. We stopped playing, you know. And when you do that in professional rugby, you know, you tend to lose. So I don't have one particular reason. I mean, what about you, Lewis? Do you think there was a particular moment or a particular reason why we lost the game?
Well, I mean, I think if you're looking for a particular moment, Faf de Klerk's decision to run the ball back from his own 22 about midway through the second half, throw a hospital pass to Sam James, the ball gets turned over, and Edinburgh win a penalty that they eventually get the try from. I think that was kind of the crux of the game right there. And I think, you know, it was a testament to the work Edinburgh did, because they kind of, after the first half, they withstood everything we threw at them. We started to get a bit frustrated. We couldn't really unlock them. We played a lot of the game around the halfway line. We didn't really control the game very well. And ultimately, Edinburgh were able to kind of win the ball back a few times, you know, put some kicks in deep. And that led to that kind of sort of brain fart moment from de Klerk. And, you know, the commentators on BT at the time said it seems like it was just frustration. And I think that kind of encapsulated it, because, you know, what you want to see from a team like Sale as they're constructed is when you're 12-0 up, you know, kind of kicking on and kind of putting your foot on Edinburgh's neck. And like you said, James, we just didn't do it. We just kind of drifted away. And you kind of looked up, you know, at the screen, and it was all of a sudden sort of 65 minutes played and nothing had really happened. And that kind of fit Edinburgh's game plan really well, because they just kind of killed the game off, a bit like Newcastle did a couple of weeks ago, and ultimately won a few penalties, kicked all three of them, you know, got a try, and that was that. And, you know, Alex, me and James have both just said the game kind of just got away from us. you know, who do you put that on? Do you put that on, you know, the coaches and the game plan that we're being asked to play? Or do you put that on the players? Do you put it on, you know, the leaders, more specifically on the pitch? You know, where do you think the kind of fault line lies for why Sale just kind of let the game get away from them on Saturday night?
Yeah, I think coming back to what I was saying earlier, this is the sort of thing that kind of got covered up by having Dimes in. And I think the fundamental problem is that on the pitch, we struggle to adapt, don't we? And we've said this for a long time, that we sort of have a game plan and we're well set up to execute that game plan. But if that game plan doesn't work, we really, really find it difficult to change and kind of react to the game situation. And it's the same sort of thing like when we get on the wrong side of referees, we just stay on the wrong side of them. We don't kind of give away a couple of penalties and work out what we're doing. We just keep doing the same thing. Which, and I think that's what happened in this game, that we just didn't have the personnel on the field to react to the situation as it kind of changed. And I think, you know, you have to put that on the leaders in the squad. But then I suppose you kind of say, well, who are your leaders in the squad? And it was a bit of a struggle because, you know, you haven't got John O'Ross, you haven't got AJ McGinty, you haven't got Ben or Tom Curry. You know, people who've kind of been that cornerstone of the leadership group for a long time. And I suppose then you kind of at the stage where people are going to say, okay, well, Faf de Klerk should be in that leadership group and should be influencing it. But then you're kind of putting the pressure of that leadership on someone who you don't want to have that on their shoulders, I think, for me. Is, you know, you want Faf to kind of be able to play his natural game and be expressive and leave the kind of other stuff up to other people. So I think it was probably a bit of kind of naivety and, you know, fundamentally, maybe there's a bit of a lack of kind of top level European experience in that squad and being able to play in these games. You know, it is different in Europe. It's a different sort of feeling, a different games to those that are in the Premiership. And when you look at our squad, you know, there's a very low number of them who've got experience in this competition, isn't there? I think even our best players, you know, Faf, Rohan, have never played in it. So that's kind of maybe part of the problem with our recruitment policy being largely a mix of academy kids and people from South Africa, that we don't have players who've kind of played at this kind of level before almost. Now, I'm not saying Super Rugby is, you know, Super Rugby is as good as the Champions Cup, clearly, but it's a different competition. And I think that lack of experience showed, didn't it? And Edinburgh probably had a bit more, certainly with their internationals, a bit more now at this kind of level to be able to understand where they were going wrong and fix it and get themselves back into the game. And we were just kind of, we were in a position where if we were a better team, we would have been able to stop them doing that. But because we're not a better team, because we are inexperienced and, you know, inflexible in our kind of tactics, it meant that, as you say, once the tide had turned, there was kind of no way it was turning back, which, you know, is a massive issue if we want to be serious in this competition, I think. And, you know, ever. We just don't have that experience to be able to, in these pressure games, turn up, perform and adapt.
I think that's a brilliant point that you made around the internationals in our squad, because it's a really salient point in that we've gone out and acquired a lot of tier one international quality players, but none of them have more than a handful of caps at the top level of European club competition. And you are absolutely right when you say, you know, the Super Rugby and Champions Cup is probably of comparable quality. Maybe Champions Cup's a little bit ahead of it, but yeah, you don't get many windy nights, you know, in somewhere as cold as Manchester in December in Super Rugby. You get lots of fast-running rugby and you get lots of opportunities to score tries and a lot of broken field play, which you don't really have. And then you compare that to Edinburgh, you know, who brought back a lot of Tier 1 internationals as well, many of them who play for Scotland and are very used to those conditions and that way of playing. Like you said, it's just a little bit of nous that they have to kind of grind out these results. And it's something that's really seems to be plaguing Sale to start the year. I've actually got a stat that I wanted to share. Since the opening game of the 2020-2021 season, Sale are scoring on average 19 points a game across all competitions. So if you then take away the 32 points we scored against Northampton in the opening game of the season, that drops to 15 points a game. And quite frankly, we're in a position where we're not going to win, not even going to compete at the top level of European club competition when you're only scoring 15 points a game. It just isn't going to happen. And James, we saw that again on Saturday night. It's a big thing that I keep coming back to. No matter who you're playing, no matter what level of competition you're playing, you shouldn't really be getting beaten by a team that's only scoring 16 points, and especially a team that's not really offering much around the field, which I think it's fair to say Edinburgh didn't on Saturday. So I just keep coming back time and time again to our attack and our attacking structure. And I'm interested to get your thoughts, because what do you think is going wrong? Why are we struggling so much to put points on the board and ultimately put teams away and pick up wins to start this season?
Well, there's a lot in that that I think I need to unpick a little bit. First of all, our attack has been a problem for over a season, right? We haven't played good to watch rugby since Addison and Haley went. And the year before that, Danny Cipriani, or maybe it was 2 years before that, you know, we don't play attractive rugby. What I'd say is, though, I remember going to watch Sale playing brilliant rugby in the end of the 90s and getting smashed. You know, losing 50 points to 30 isn't actually that fun every single week. What Steve Diamond had managed to make us into a team was very difficult to beat. Forshaw's defence was absolutely excellent. And scoring 19 points on average a game, you know, in the way that our defence is working, is going to put you in the remit of either winning with 4 points, right, or getting a losing bonus. And that's pretty much as what's been happening. And actually winning more often than not. That's why we would have come in the top four if it wasn't for COVID last season. That's why we qualified for the Champions Cup 2 years in a row. And that's why we're in the top four in the Premiership this season. The problem is that Diamond's now been taken out of that. And, you know, the issue within that now is when you've got such fine margins that you win or lose by, you only need to be off it a little bit and you're going to start losing more than you're winning. And when your attack is not right, you're not going to play your way out of trouble. Yeah. You're not going to have one of those moments that we used to have a couple of years ago where you just suddenly score 40 odd points and you'd be like, blimey, we're a good side when we click. Well, we haven't clicked for well over a year. Now, a lot of our listeners feel that the answer is we just need a whole new coaching staff. Well, I think that that's a bit of panic and just a lot of assumption there. You know, a whole new coaching staff is a lot more change, and I don't think that will drive performance. We haven't got bad coaches. You know, I've seen a lot of comments online about, our caliber of player has gone up there. Therefore, we need a higher caliber of coach. I mean, that's just a complete load of absolute nonsense. I think Mike Forshaw is pretty much the best defensive coach in the country. And secondly, Boyd is an absolute brilliant coach in Northampton, and they might go down this year. So it's not as simple as that. You know, it's a psychological, physical game, and you only need to be slightly off it and things change. But what we can all agree on, all fans, is that our attack is pretty awful and has been for well over a year. And frankly, as a fan of the game of rugby, you do want to watch good rugby, and I think that most teams are struggling to play good rugby. There are a handful like Bristol who are, but Sale are definitely in the camp of, you know, not great rugby to watch, I'm afraid. And I would like that to be fixed, but I'd prefer for it to be fixed that we just win more than we lose and we come in the top four. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's just, I think it's perfectly fair to say every Sale fan would be very happy with a team that wins 7 or 8 out of 10 games and scores 19 points. The issue is when you're scoring 19 points, they're winning 4 or 5 games out of 10. It's just that combination of unattractive or uninspiring rugby compounded by the fact that we can't seem to edge out any results at the moment unless we're able to completely overwhelm the other team's forward pack is a bit concerning. And Alex, you know, where do you stand on this? Do you think the attack is the biggest issue that we have at the moment and is the reason why we're losing games like Saturdays?
Well, I think there's a point here that you've got to look at English champions in the last few years. And for all the brilliant rugby that Quins and Northampton play, realistically, the teams that have won are Surrey and Exeter, who play with a very similar kind of model to us in that it's built on defence. And, you know, I think what Surrey and Exeter do much better than us is their accuracy and their execution, because we probably create nearly as many chances as they do. But, you know, if Surrey's had created that chance where Rohan goes through the gap and has got Sam James on his left, they would have finished it. And if Exeter are 10 metres out from the line, they will score a try. And what we don't do is, it's the kind of, we've come back to it time and time again, but we're not clinical enough for the kind of limited attacking opportunities we give ourselves by the way we play. And, you know, I think what, for me, you kind of have to go, okay, clearly the model there is to have a really robust defence. You know, we might not create that many attacking opportunities, but the improvement has to be taking the opportunities when they arise. Because if, you know, look at this game, if Rob Dupree kicks his second conversion, which is a piece of cake compared to his first one, we win the game. If, you know, if Rohan puts Sam James in, we win the game. You know, they are marginal moments. And yeah, we didn't perform very well in the second half, and that's why it got away from us. But I think we did enough. We created enough opportunities to win the game. We just didn't take them. And, you know, that ultimately is the difference. So, yes, you can go and play the Quinn style of rugby where you chuck it around and you're incredibly exciting. But number one, we don't have the players to do that by any stretch of the imagination. Number two, it would require a complete change in mentality. And number three, even when you do it, it's not going to win you a league. It'll make games more exciting to watch, and it'll make, you know, for some really great highlights reels, and you might win try of the season. But you're never going to win. You know, you come up against Exeter with that style of rugby and they will suffocate it. And I think, you know, you see that time and time again. And Bristol are probably a better example of kind of playing positive rugby. But fundamentally, they're still, you know, they've got a squad good enough to win the Premiership, but they're not near the level of Exeter. And if Exeter had been up against them in the final instead of Wasps, they would have, you know, I have no doubt they would have beaten them. So I think we have to kind of, we've set out a stall and a way of playing and a kind of mentality. And I think what we have to get better at is the execution of our attacking play, because I do think, you know, if we execute better and if we're more accurate, and what we showed in the first 30 minutes on Saturday was that, you know, when we do execute accurately, which we did for that first half an hour, we look really good and we create opportunities and we've got players who will, you know, put points on the board. But when we stop creating those opportunities, which happens in every game that we play, you know, I don't think we'll ever win a game kind of 50-0 again, probably. You know, like we did when we had Gloucester at home, for example. But we have to be able to kind of ride out those periods and have a bit of a grittier mentality. And that's an accuracy point as well, you know, not giving away penalties, being smart in defence, knowing when to exit properly, i.e. the Faf incident, as we shall refer to it. So I think if we want to win the league, we have to continue on the path we're on, but we have to get better with the way we do it, for me, rather than a sea change and kind of going to attacking rugby.
I think you make a very interesting point there about making the right decisions and playing mistake-free rugby, something that, unfortunately, I don't think you can say was the case for Jean-Luc Dupree, who once again decided to throw his shoulder at somebody. I mean, Alex, what was your thoughts on a decision from a very talented player at a key moment of the game that might have ultimately sunk our chances of winning on Saturday?
Yeah, I think it's just so frustrating, isn't it, to kind of see it happen time and time again. And it is the way, I think there's a genuine issue in kind of like, you look at 2 weeks ago, John O'Ross on Matt Rogerson could easily have been, you know, I thought that was a relatively lenient call. Now, you know, there were lots of mitigating factors, but that could easily have been a yellow card with a different referee. And we just kind of, we put ourselves at risk of that by the way that we tackle and the way that we play. And it's frustrating because, you know, when it comes off in our favour, it's fine and we might knock someone back, but when it doesn't come off, it costs us 10 minutes. And as you rightly say, it probably maybe didn't cost us the game, but it certainly stopped us from coming back and winning it, I think. So, yeah, it's just, you know, it's another in a long line of stupid kind of... it's more the penalty aspect, I think, than the yellow card. The, you know, you've seen across rugby recently that if you try and hit someone hard and you get it wrong, then you are at massive risk of a yellow and red card now. And you've just got to be really careful around the head area. Rightly so. But it's more the discipline aspect of just giving away penalties and putting yourself at risk of kind of getting that yellow card and giving away that penalty that is frustrating, because that's how we let teams back into games all the time, because they're not going to run through us and they're not going to run around us, but they will win penalties off us, push us down the field, and then get themselves into positions where they can win games. So, yeah, just frustrating for me more than anything.
James, what did you make of JLDP's last sort of latest misdemeanor?
Well, he just... I wonder whether the second row is the best place for him, actually, because he's a little bit less mobile when he's in the second row and therefore less in positions where he's having to make decisions, game-changing decisions, rather than just having to basically exercise his strength and his offloading ability. And he is brilliant in contact and he always gets over the game line. But I think as a decision-maker, which number eight is, that is a decision-making position, he isn't, I don't think, as intelligent a rugby player. And I don't mean that in a nasty way. I mean, you know, at professional level, you get those players like Nick Easter, for example, whose rugby intelligence like took his performance way above his ability. Jean-Luc Dupré's ability is there for everyone to see. He hasn't played number eight like a huge amount in his career. Certainly hasn't done for a while for Sale. And I just think, you know, when you're arriving in those rucks, mauls, you know, and you're more mobile because you're a back rower. You've got to make those decisions. And in that case, I think he just, you know, just had a bit of a shocker, didn't he?
I love Jean-Luc Dupré as a player. I think players like him are fantastic. And I genuinely think we don't really utilise him or his brother as part of our system. I think we'd be a lot better getting them playing a bit further, out wide, kind of getting them into positions where they have mismatches against the opposition, where they can kind of run over people a bit more readily and actually get their hands free and make the offloads that we know they're good at doing. We don't really see that with Sale. We just kind of use them as battering rams up the middle. But yeah, I think it's a great point because I don't think I've ever seen somebody in Jean-Luc Dupré who's as nasty on the rugby field. And again, don't mean that in a negative way, because I think it's a brilliant attribute. You know, you see it when teams score tries against us. He's the first person there pushing the try scorer over because he hates to lose. He hates to concede points. He's an extremely competitive player. But that is kind of boiling over. A couple of times we saw it against Worcester, we've seen it against now. And there's that kind of balance between competitiveness and, you know, intelligence on field that you needed to John O'Ross there to calm him down. Now, John O'Ross is also equally hot-headed and maybe that doesn't help things either. But this is, again, kind of the areas where we're probably misusing the talents of a player like Jean-Luc Dupré because we don't have the structures in place to mitigate some of the risks that he plays with inherently. You know, and I think playing him in the second row has been a bit of a masterstroke because, like you said, it means the decisions that he has to make are a lot less significant in the course of the game. Whereas Dan seems to have a bit more sort of bit more of an aptitude for kind of making those decisions. So very, very frustrating, especially, and you know, I'm sure he's frustrated as a player because we're not making the best of him in our system at the moment as well. But, you know, between him and Van der Merwe and Ross and, you know, all these other players, we have to be really careful because, you know, in games like Saturdays, you know, a single penalty decides the outcome and it knocks us out of Europe. So really something that you don't really want to see. And again, kind of speaks to the ways that we have as a team on the field to go still, to actually develop it into a team that can control games and win them and ultimately push the club forward. But that's probably enough negativity. for now. Let's talk positives. James, you know, you'll certainly want to talk about this. Sam James at 15. I mean, the questions about his pace and his ability as a defender, as the last man, I think are still in question. But I thought he had a fantastic game, especially in the first half, pulling the strings and these little nudges over the top. I thought we saw probably the best game we've seen out of Sam James for a long time. And it really brought his skill set as a footballer to the fore, playing quite surprisingly at fullback on Saturday.
Well, he's just a great footballer, isn't he? And, you know, he's also good under the high ball, don't forget. The way he takes the high ball with his arms out in front of him is quite a rare skill. Luke is excellent under the high ball in a different way. But he's just a brilliant footballer, reads the game very intelligently. I think, you know, his kicking game is something that we've massively underutilised since the restart. He can kick off his left or his right foot. And at 13, why the hell haven't we been using that much more? Driving teams back. Keeps defences guessing because they have to hold a little bit further back. You have to have the 9, the 15, well, all the back three really, covering little kicks over the top. So, no, he's a fabulous footballer. He'll do a job there for us. Luke did need a rest. I got the impression that there was a bit of fatigue there with Luke. But I do think that with Sam, maybe defensively, he's probably not the best last defender in a way that Luke is actually pretty good. I'd still like to see Hammersley have another go there at some point this year. But we are struggling a little bit on the wing. I thought another player that played really, really well was Van Rensburg. I mean, in fact, he's been absolutely excellent for us since the restart. He's probably been our best player so far this year. He's managed to remain fit, which is, you know, unusual. But I think we mentioned it in the preview. You know, he's lost a bit of weight and he's rapid. Absolutely rapid. And actually, he works quite well at 13 outside Sam Hill. Because Sam Hill, he can truck it up, but he's also got, you know, reasonable hands. And it just frees up Van Rensburg backs out a little bit further out to use his pace as well as his power. So the only issue there, of course, is you then lose that link play, as we saw with that that Alex was talking about. You know, he sometimes is unable to run at full speed and see who and what is around him. That's Van Rensburg's. He can pass. He can pass. He's actually quite a well-rounded rugby player. What he doesn't have is really kind of like 360 vision, which of course is something that Sam James does have. Who else do you think then played well, Alex? Do you think there was somebody else that stood out on the pitch?
I thought Sam Dugdale had a really good first half. I completely agree on Van Rensburg. I think he looks really good in the 13 channel and he's got the pace to play there. And you are right that what we tend to do with him at 12 is kind of put him at people, at defenders rather than gaps. And when you put him at gaps, he is genuinely unstoppable because, you know, if you get a hand on him, it's not enough. You've got to get a shoulder and a body and probably another shoulder from someone else to help you out. So, yeah, agree on Van Rensburg. I really like Sam Hill. I said that at the time. I think he looks like a really good player. And I think if we start to kind of, you know, he is in a difficult position in that he's kind of coming in as a relatively new player to an underperforming team, but I still think he looks good. And I think he's got a bit of quality and maybe, you know, he's got a bit of that kind of leadership that we were talking about earlier. I think, you know, in the forwards, I mentioned Dugdale, and then I think Matt Postlethwaite had another good game. One area that did go well was the line out. You know, I think we haven't spoken about it, which is generally a good sign, but I don't think we lost a line out. Certainly we didn't based on the stats. So, you know, I think you have to kind of give a bit of credit to Matt Postlethwaite for that. But, you know, I think there were good performances in parts. And I suppose if you take that first 30 minutes, a lot of people did play well. And then for 50 minutes, a lot of people didn't do a lot, which is sort of a very simplified way of putting it. But yeah, for me, I think Dugdale looks good, Postlethwaite, and completely agree, Van Rensburg, probably, as Lewis rightly said, our best player at the moment.
Okay, so let's look on its head then, before we head to stats. Was there anyone where the performance felt like it was a little bit lacking? Because There's an area that I want to talk about before we move on, but I'm interested to see if you guys also bring them up.
Well, I'll go. I think breakdown, talked about it already. Now we probably didn't have the personnel in the squad, but I think we struggled again, especially second half. I thought it was going to be improved when Dugdale got that turnover in the first half, but I still think we are missing kind of people to hit those breakdowns and win us the ball. And certainly in defence, I mean, that last 2 minutes was just depressing to watch. And then, I mean, I don't want to steal this, but the scrums were atrocious, weren't they? Our defensive scrum was just taken to bits by Edinburgh. I don't know whether we got on the wrong side of the ref or what, but Cooper Woolley is just really struggling at scrum time, which is sort of almost making him hard to pick, I think, at the moment. But I'll throw over to James, but they were the two areas that were a massive concern for me. And I think that's more with missing key personnel to shore up those areas.
Yeah, Cooper Woolley's a big worry at the moment because he brings more mobility around the park and he's definitely slimmed up since he's been at Sale. But I wonder if he's just all that, you know, a little bit of power in the scrum. And certainly he's a little bit taller than, you know, the trend was for you. Go back 10 years, you know, you Phil Vickery type, you know, very tall, big tight heads. And the trend seems to be going back now more towards your kind of shorter, stockier tight heads, a bit like Will Griff John. But yeah, he's been singled out by refs and he's just getting pinged. I mean, and Diamond said it before he left, didn't he? Just sort of say, you know, Cooper Woolley is, for some reason, you know, getting picked on by refs, but it is making it difficult to select him at the moment. Certainly, you know, as a starting option, I'd say, which is a bit, we're lucky that we've got Oosthuizen and Griff Charm, basically. Otherwise, that would be a major problem for us historically. And then on the turnover, I was just going to say that, yes, we're missing one of the Curries, no doubt about it. But I thought at the end of the game that what we weren't lacking, we were either lacking a dominant first tackle, yeah, that pushed them back so that their supporting players then had to retreat into the ruck, which enables one of our guys to have a go at the ball. That's usually how most turnovers happen. A dominant tackle, you know, then you know you can't get the momentum to clear out, and then the opposition basically, you know, turn you over. But the other way to do it in those scenarios is when you go for the penalty for sealing off by not competing, basically. And what we were doing is we were going in for a proper tackle first up to bring them down and then rolling out of the way, but they weren't dominant tackles. So there was no way of our guys actually getting their hands in. We would have been better basically making them take the tackle. You know, like you see in rugby league where they basically just they just fall to ground. You see that quite a lot when teams are trying to close out the game. And try and close out a game for 2 minutes without sealing off, almost unheard of. So I think we should have almost been, you know, letting the momentum come forward, not completing the tackle, allowing the tackled person to go to ground and then not competing and watch all these people basically just go off their feet. That I mean, it would have happened, I'm sure. So that's my only comment on that.
Yeah, well, I think that kind of points to our lack of rugby intelligence almost, doesn't it? Because we, you know, that is not a thing you would associate with Sale being clever and kind of winning those penalties. I think we really struggle to kind of show that on the field, and it's almost we are a bit hit them hard, we'll run over them, and we don't have that kind of knowledge and that wherewithal and that rugby intelligence to go, okay, let's step away from the tackle and let them seal off and let them give away the penalty, which I think, you know, we've always struggled with that, haven't we? And it is a source of frustration that we aren't a very clever rugby team most of the time, I don't think.
Yeah, and for me, the area that I wanted to talk about was the wing play again, because I think when you're looking at trends of the season so far, what's becoming evident is that we have a real lack of pace in our back three. It doesn't matter if you put Simon Hammersley or Luke James or Sam James or whoever else in that group. We are really struggling to stretch defences. So one of the issues with Denny Solomona's try,
you know, not including the fact that it was a very obvious forward pass, which, you know, sometimes they go your way, was the fact that Solomona got the ball and it looked like he was running in quicksand. And, you know, ultimately that didn't matter. You know, we were able to score the try. But one of the reasons why we really struggled in the second half was we just couldn't control the game properly. And I think a big part of that is we lack two things from our wingers, pace and actually size. Because we were talking, you know, earlier about, you know, why do Exeter play so well and why do Saracens play so well, even if they're not scoring lots of points? It's because they use their wingers more than just as battering rams. What they do, and Saracens were very good at it, is if you couldn't run over a team, they'd loft the kicks up high into the 22, they'd put the kicks in behind, then they'd have either a really quick winger chasing the ball and putting the opposition under pressure to force a mistake and get the territory that way, or they'd bomb a kick up high and have the players to compete for it, you know, and win the ball back and offer an alternative path forward rather than just running over people. And the Edinburgh game, again, it's the same thing. Sale just couldn't get out, you know, couldn't establish a dominance on the game line, couldn't run over the opposition. And that's why we ended up basically just playing almost exclusively off of de Klerk as the nine, you know, throwing miracle passes in the hope that something would work. You know, and I think it's a problem that I just don't see a solution to at the moment, because our wingers, Solomona just looks completely out of form, and you know, I don't know the reason why for that. But, you know, he's kind of bulked up and he's slimmed back down, and neither seems to work recently. Marlon Yard, I mean, the jury is definitely out in terms of how significant that horrific injury he suffered 18 months ago is going to have on the rest of his career, because, you know, it's something that changes a player and his abilities, especially someone who was very reliant on his pace like Yard was. You know, and when you don't have those two, I mean, Byron McGuigan's still out. You know, Simon Hammersley, he's not particularly, you know, quick. Sam James not particularly quick. Luke James not particularly quick. Brad Rensburg's probably our quickest player now. And I just think it's a real issue that we just see time and time again, is that we don't have anyone who can win the ball back in the air. We don't have anybody who can really pressure the opposition. And I think it just leads to games like Saturday's, where you have, you know, a lot of possession around midfield, but you can't really do anything because you can't get over the game line and you can't do anything clever. And again, you know, it all comes back to kind of that on-field intelligence that I think is just a little bit lacking at the moment. James, what do you think about our winger situation at the moment?
Yeah, again, I don't want it to sound like I'm bashing our listeners, because I love our listeners and I love our chats on Twitter, and it's always done in a good way. But I think that there is a bit of a blind spot around wingers. When the Ollie Thorley rumour came out, lots of people saying, you know, the one thing we don't need is more wingers. Again, there's always some common ground. The common ground is that I do think that Aaron Reid and especially Tom Roebuck should be getting opportunities. In another Sale era, these guys would have had their opportunities already with a proper run in the side. And you never know. You know, Tom Roebuck, I think, really has got very high potential. Could have become a fixture in the side, a bit like Rhys Samet has at Gloucester. So I think that's some common ground. We've got some good young wingers coming through who deserve that and should be given a chance. I don't think anybody would argue with that. I think where my difference is that, you know, we're all massive Yardie fans, like before his injury. I mean, he was on the sort of the verge of England call-up. But for me, he has struggled since he's come back from injury. He's not through lack of effort, but for me, he seems to have lost a little bit of pace. And maybe there's an element of confidence as well that just affects the way he plays. I'm not sure. You know, he always used to, you know, follow breaks and be on the end of breaks and scoring tries. He doesn't seem to be on the end of those breaks anymore. Solomona used to track up and down that right wing and used to score lots of tries in the bottom right-hand corner, basically, often acrobatically. Now, he can still finish. You'll always have that in his blood. But again, I think there's a lot going on with Denny. We haven't seen the best of him. He's been in and out of selection as well. You know, I think he's been treated quite poorly in the last 12 months. He's literally been in and out. He's been on the bench, you know, and that surprises me. You know, he was one of our best players, and I think we've mismanaged him a little bit. And again, we've not used him properly either. We often use him, especially when there was no Van Rensburg last season, before we got to Elanghi, we'd use Solomona as the crash ball person coming off the blind shoulder, especially off line outs or, you know, first or second phase ball in the middle of the park, just to chuck it up. I think Denny's much more silky than that. And I think that, you know, he should be given a bit more license to follow the play and also run up and down that right-hand touchline. And with his rugby league background, he's also pretty useful in the air going forwards. And I think we should be using him on kick chase a bit more intelligently there, just like you said, Lewis. So there's definitely worries there. And I think that whilst there's worries, why not give some of these youngsters a go? You know, it might give someone like Denny the boot that he needs. And we've seen he's really passionate when we've watched him, Aaron Reed, getting a try. He's been so happy for him. So, you know, maybe he would accept that he deserves a little go in the side. But I certainly wouldn't be ruling out looking at other wingers for next season, unless our wingers improve their form. And that needs to be two ways. One, the team needs to use them better. And secondly, you know, they need to up their game a little bit, don't they?
Absolutely. And I think that kind of brings us naturally to an end on the Edinburgh game. And we're talking about wingers who need to step up their performances. And I guess, well, you know, there's no time like the present. And Sale's next game, as we kind of pivot away from Europe, is going to be back in the Gallagher Premiership against Wasps on Sunday, the 27th. So you've had plenty of time to, have a little post-Christmas walk. James, you know, let's get straight on to it. I mean, obviously, again, it's a truncated season. It's only been a few months since we had that fantastic performance the Rico, where Sale's second team beat Wasps' first team. I mean, what can we expect from Wasps on Sunday? Are you looking at this as a real opportunity for Sale to kind of get back to winning ways? Or do you think this is going to be a real tough encounter that might kind of continue the downward spiral that the team seems to be on at the moment?
We need to win it, don't we? And it's funny what a win could do to our confidence. Yes, Europe is a write-off, but it's still all to play for in the Premiership, and we're top four. And Wasps are in the bottom three. So, you know, is anybody calling for Blackett to be sacked? Or for, you know, higher calibre of coaches there? No. I think that there's still plenty to play for, but a win, I think, is quite important as a reset moment here. I think if we lose again, then, you know, the wheels might well come off. And Alex, I'll come to you shortly just to discuss, you know, any head-to-heads that you're looking for or how Sale can beat Wasps. If you actually have a look at Wasps, before I come to you, Alex, I'll just talk about how Wasps have done so far this year. And they've won one game at home against Bristol, only by 3 points. They sort of, you know, scraped that win. And then they've lost twice, once away at Gloucester, who are hardly sort of, you know, in peak condition. And then at home to Newcastle. Okay, we've lost to Newcastle. Even so, losing at home to the newly promoted side, you know, is not a brilliant situation. What they have done, of course, is they've turned it around in Europe and won two games in a row. And, you know, that kind of momentum is important, building confidence. They're playing some really good attacking rugby as well. You know, 19 points against Wasps, I'd say, probably isn't going to be enough. So that's something to watch out for. And then if you have a look at, you know, their signings from last season, they brought in Ryan Mills, but he's not played yet. Levi Douglas is getting some game time for them. He's coming from Bath. Alfie Barbary has been promoted from the academy. There's hardly any sort of new blood come in since the 2019-2020 season. But what they have done is they've shipped out, I would say, some people who were, you know, never fully performed. Someone like Billy Searle, Charlie Matthews, Ashley Johnson sort of has come to an end, and Nizam Carr's gone back to the Bulls in South Africa. But what they've managed to do is they've got Jimmy Gopeth fit again, who missed a lot of early last season injured. And he's so important for them. Why? Because he kicks 90-odd percent of goals. And if Sale kicked 90-odd percent of goals, we wouldn't lose many games. And the other thing I'd throw in is the way they've got Sopoanga playing at 15. He really adds not just an attacking threat, but he's another footballing brain, another footballer, good kicker. He's good under the high ball. He does get through that first tackle. He's got quick feet. He plays that second distributor as well. giving a break to Umanga. You know, they've got a young number 10, but between Gopeth and Sopwaga, I think they've got a really good way of protecting Umanga and you know, allowing the Flyers, people like Josh Bassett, Kibirigi, things like that. You know, they've got some serious pace in their lineup that we're going to really have to watch out for, because that's not a particular strength of ours. And then in the you know, they've got Gaskell fit again. I think he's playing quite well, and he's getting their line out working nicely. Alfie Barbary, clearly, you know, he's playing at eight at the moment. You know, he's a hooker really, but, you know, God, he is difficult to put down. But, you know, I'd be saying to someone like Cam Neild, you know, this was you 3 or 4 years ago, put him back in his box. So I wonder if Cam Neild will play maybe even at seven at the weekend and be tasked with stopping Barbary right on the gain line. And Jack Willis, of course, you know, if he's back and available and playing, you know, a head-to-head between him and Tom Curry could be very appetising. I hope I haven't stolen that away from you, Alex. So, yeah, to come to you now, Alex. So, you know, they're clearly a good team to watch, but it's been a bit of a mixed season for them as well. How do you think Sale should approach this game against Wasps? What are the head-to-heads that we need to look out for? And ultimately, how are we going to beat them?
Thanks, mate. Yeah, I think it's an interesting one with Wasps, because they almost feel like they have kind of stalled from where they were last season and being really impressive. They haven't kind of developed on that, I think. And they had that incredible run of form towards the back end of last season, but kind of, let's not forget, the first half of last season, they were dreadful. And we're, you know, 10th at one point, I think. So, you know, they are certainly beatable, and there's nothing to fear. But at the same time, I think they have got kind of strengths that we haven't. I think we always struggle with Josh Bassett as a winger, because he is just fast, stays in the channel and runs down that wing. And that kind of, if they can get him into space, because of our blitz defence and the way that our wingers push up from the outside, he is going to be really dangerous. So I think we kind of have to be a little bit clever about kind of how we defend and what space we give to them. Because if you've got, you know, three playmakers in Jacob Umanga, Jimmy Gopeth and Liam Sopwaga playing, they will put Bassett and Kibirigi on the wings into the gaps that they need to put them in. And that could be really dangerous. So I think that's the first kind of consideration that we need to think about, because they have got threats. They've got a really good balance of probably the things we haven't, which is playmakers, which we probably struggle for a little bit, and speed, which we've said we struggle for. You know, they're playing a Dogwu in the centre at the moment, who is looking really good and scored a try, I think, the other day, off a Barbieri offload, which I'll come to in a minute. So I think, you know, We've got to be aware of that threat and understand that they will try and exploit the way we defend to put those guys into space. The other kind of thing that I think they will be an interesting matchup is in the back row, especially if Willis plays in Curry. That would be, you know, one part of it. But then you've also got, if you've got Barbieri at eight, you've got Young playing at kind of seven or six, so depending on what Willis is doing. They've got a very strong back row, and we, you know, probably a season ago, had a really strong back row, and it's kind of been a bit at odds this season, you know, with Dan Dupree getting injured, John O'Ross not playing as much, the Currys being out. Our back row is kind of in a bit of a state of flux and less strength than it was, but that's going to be an interesting matchup, because I think, you know, if we let their back row start playing, they almost kind of dictate the game. And I think you see that with, if Willis starts making turnovers, you know, they're throwing offloads when they're running in the loops, then that could be dangerous. So I think those are the two key areas for me. You're absolutely right about, you know, if we give Gopeth a penalty to kick, he will kick it. And I think we've got to kind of, our discipline is going to be a key one. You know, we can give penalties away up to kind of 40 metres from our own line. But after that, anything you give away, you've got to be kind of expecting that it'll be kicked. And then the other point is on kind of two old boys, Tommy Taylor and James Gaskell, who, you know, as they link up at the line out, that's another area of probably strength for them and somewhere where they might try and challenge us. I think people kind of commented on our defensive line out on Saturday. It's interesting that people who were saying that we can't even win our own line out are now saying that when JP Dupree starts, they were disappointed that our defensive line out wasn't better, because I was just happy that we were winning our own ball. But maybe I'm not not stretching myself enough. But I think, you know, they'll look to challenge our line out, and we've got to be ready for that. I think one area where we might be able to gain a bit of dominance is the scrum, depending on who we pick. If we play Will Griff John, I don't think, you know, McIntyre and Timanga Allen, who are kind of probably their starting props at the moment. But, you know, I don't think they've got anyone who's a massive threat to us at scrum time. So I think that's one area where we could look to match them and maybe improve. But I think overall with Wasps at home, we've kind of seen, and we seem to play them at home at Christmas quite a lot. I don't know whether I'm kind of just making this up, but, you know, they don't really like travelling up north. We tend to do quite well against them at home. We usually let them score a couple of tries. You know, I'm thinking about the Kipperigi one last year where we did the chip and chase and dodged it down, but we usually have enough in the bank to beat them. So I think, you know, if we take all the good bits in the first half an hour against Edinburgh, if we play like that, we'll absolutely wipe them off the park. And if we can play like that and then for the other 50 minutes play okay rather than rubbish like we did on Saturday, I think we have got sufficient talent and form, even in the kind of state we're in at the moment, to beat them. But I think if we let them kind of turn it into a game where Sopawanga's coming off from his 15 position, finding the gaps, putting Kibirigi, Adogwu, Bassett in space, because we're either not competing at the breakdown or we're rushing up in defence and kind of leaving those gaps for them to exploit, and we're not making dominant hits, then they could score quite a few tries against us. So the way to beat them is to execute accurately on our own game plan, because if we do that, we are good enough to beat them. Unfortunately, that is much easier said than done, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you got anything to add, Lewis?
Just that, you know, Wasps match up so well against us at the moment. You look at what their strengths are. It's the pace out wide, and actually in the 13 channel, moving a Dogwood to 13 is a brilliant move from Lee Blackett, who's a fantastic coach in general. But you've just seen it the last couple of weeks. Having that extra set of pace in the outside channel means that they can just get around teams so easily. I think you've got that. You know, they're a real counter-attacking threat, and they can just run around us all day long. They've got loads of footballers in the team. You know, we haven't mentioned Dan Robson. He's a fantastic scrum half. But obviously, yeah, Sopawanga, Umanga, Jimmy Gopeth, all players very adept at kicking and can move the field around. And then you look at, well, the breakdown now, you know, Tom Curry, you know, who should be back, you know, for the game after his mandatory rest period with England's come to an end. He's going to have the game of his life because all of a sudden he's got to go against Jack Willis, who might actually be the best flanker, you know, in the country at the moment, although Ben Curry had him on toast a couple of months ago. You know, you've got Jack Willis, you've got Tom Young, Brad Shields, you know, really massive back rowers who can really impact things. Then you've got Alfie Barbary, who's just this, you know, prodigy, whether they play him at 2-8 or as a centre himself. You know, he's so dynamic in the loose. He's got a very bright future ahead of him. So Wasps match up really, really well against us, and I'm not feeling very confident given the holes that we've got in our squad at the moment. But Alex is right. If there's an area to target them, it's definitely it's definitely at the scrum and in the pack. I think getting Ross Harrison back, getting Kearney Eustason back will make a massive difference for us. I think that's an area that we can really target. And all it takes is, you know, for the weather to be a bit poor, you know, the game to, you know, to be played in the, you know, kind of awkward conditions, a bit damp, a bit cold, etc. And we can absolutely get a result out of this game. It's just, if we play like we've been playing for the last couple of weeks against Wasps, they'll tear us apart. If we play better than we've been playing in the last couple of weeks, there's still a good chance Wasps could tear us apart because of just how dynamic they are in the areas that we're weak in. So a massive onus is going to be on the scrum this week. It's time for Dorian West to really earn his paycheck. And what I really hope we see is just nice controlling play from our halfbacks, because if we don't do it, Wasps are going to have a field day, given that they're playing basically three fly halves in their back line at the moment. So let's do some predictions. James, you're the man in the know about all our opposition teams. What do you think the score will be on Sunday?
I've got absolutely no idea. I'm just going to say we've got to hope that we turn a corner here and stabilise the team and we put in a really good performance. So I'm just going to say Sale 28, Wasps 21.
Okay, Alex?
Yeah, I am also quite confident. I think, and maybe foolishly, but I think Sale 24, Wasps 16.
Okay, I'm going to be the dissenting view then. I'm going to go Wasps 27, Sale 12. I'm not feeling very confident, and I think Wasps are one of the teams that can just put points on you in a hurry, and we absolutely cannot do that at the moment. So hopefully I'm wrong, but we'll see. So that is another episode of the Shark Tank podcast in the can. I want to say a massive thank you to everybody who's been tweeting us their views on the Edinburgh game, three-word reviews, everyone who did the polls over the weekend. You know, we really appreciate the support and you're listening to this podcast. And that's everything from my side. Alex, James, is there anything else you'd like to mention before we sign off?
Not from me.
No, nothing from me other than bring back Warren Gatland. Still going to happen. And, you know, that's just... the customary throw a DOR name into the hat.
On that, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I've been talking to my dad a fair bit this last week, who's a season ticket holder at Sale, and he's really convinced me that Stuart Lancaster might be the man for the job. I'm watching Leinster, who were actually pretty poor on Saturday lunchtime, still put 30-odd points past Northampton and win that game at a canter. Has really sort of turned me around the idea to Lancaster. I think he would solve a lot of the issues Sale have at the moment as a real kind of coaching brain. And so I think this week, that's my pick for who would like to be the DOR. James, maybe to sign us off this week, you can tell us who you've decided is going to be Sale's next director of rugby for this week.
I'm still up for Jim Mallander or Conor O'Shea, so I'm still in that camp. I've not moved.
I think you might be the only person who's pushing for Conor O'Shea to be the new director of rugby.
Well, I don't understand why, because he's Harlequins played amazing rugby and won the premiership. What why have people gone off him? He went and coached a shit team. No, he's got great credentials. Anybody that's won the premiership, so and he's a good administrator, which is what you want as a director of rugby.
We'll leave you that thought.
You know, Sale fans, James, never happy unless it's the best coach in the world. So
yeah,
there'll be dissenting views, whatever comes out of it.
Yeah. So, well, there you go. You heard it here first. Conor O'Shea for Sale Director of Rugby. That's our hot tip for this week. So thank you to everyone who's listened. Thank you to everyone who continues to follow us on Twitter. We are one follower short of 2,000. And hopefully by this time next week, when we speak to you next, we will be at that 2,000 mark. So thanks to everybody, and we'll speak to you next week.